Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And we recorded that interview with John Huntsman just before the show. Now live to Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, who just tweeted that she's coming on the show to review the Golden Globe gowns. Really?
Yes, I think that you need to broaden your listenership beyond all this heavy policy stuff and look to some of the things that have been such circulation drivers for USA Today.
Yeah, and I think that you need to broaden your sense of whose fashion we should care about, because I just retweeted and added, what about men's suits?
Yeah, well, men's suits are kind of boring. No offense. That's easy for men because you know what to put on. Much more interesting, I think, to look at the women's. This could be, you know, a regular Monday feature of the Brian Lehrer show.
I think we could do the Battle of the Sexes fashion plates. All right, we just heard John Huntsman trying to relaunch No Labels here in New York today as a bipartisan problem-solving group rather than a centrist third party. Can they have an impact? You heard my skepticism.
You know, it's easy to be skeptical. It's kind of like when there are proposals for Middle East peace, the default position that it won't go anywhere is probably the one that's most likely to turn out to be correct. On the other hand, there is this broad frustration in the country about how politics works or doesn't work in Washington, and that extends also to a lot of people who are here in town in positions. So there are a couple efforts going on. No Labels is one of them that you know deserve some respectful attention. I would say that John Huntsman and Senator Manchin do not represent the base of the two parties, right? Yeah. As you were pointing out in your interview with John Huntsman, he didn't fare so well in his presidential bid. He actually worked in the administration of President Obama. Joe Manchin, probably the most conservative Democrat in the Senate. And so I think that's a challenge for them.
And he laughed off my joking anyway suggestion that he and Mayor Bloomberg form a ticket to run on in 2016. But this represents the fact that he took that as a joke, I think, represents a kind of defeat of the notion of a centrist third party, which had a little bit of currency in the last few years. If he's laughing that off and No Labels, which was trying to be a centrist third party originally, has now given that up and recast itself as, oh, we're just trying to get the two ideological parties to play nice, does that mean that the idea of a centrist third party is not that it was ever really strong, but is declining even more?
Yes, I think that's right. I think it's just hard to envision a centrist third party making much of a go out of it, because the energy in both the parties comes not from their centrist members, right? It comes from the most conservative Republicans and the most liberal Democrats.
But the idea would have been that there are enough people in the center, enough independents in the country, enough people who are moderate within each party, even though the districting gives the polarized the power to split off and have a third in American politics, but apparently not.
I think it's tough. I think it's tough the way politics works and the way the two-party system is pretty entrenched. Now, I do think Mayor Bloomberg is the most interesting player in this whole effort to get beyond the sort of hyper-partisanship that's kind of seized up Washington, because he has a lot of standing. He's got a history of independence, and he's got a ton of dough. So
he could be a real player. And he takes positions. And that's what Huntsman shrunk from in this interview, and apparently what the group, No Labels, is shrinking from. They're not going to take any centrist positions, as Mayor Bloomberg is trying to do, or at least a variety, not that he's centrist on gun laws, for example, or on sugar, but to take a variety of positions that add up to some kind of center. They're not even going to try to do that. So I did focus, as you heard, on Joe Manchin, the No Labels Democratic co-chair, idea on ABC yesterday of comprehensive anti-mass shootings legislation, gun law elements, plus mental health elements, maybe ultra-violent video game elements, whatever. Do you see anything like that becoming a serious proposal?
You know, the gun issue has been such a tough one. And what Senator Manchin's done has been really interesting because he's definitely from a pro-gun state, and he, you know, had that famous ad in his campaign that involved him shooting a gun. So he's got some credibility with people who support gun rights. But you've got to say that any gun legislation, especially the, you know, the bigger it gets, the harder it gets, is going to have a tough time in Washington. We're going to hear tomorrow from Joe Biden on his proposals from the administration. President Clinton, President Obama has a press conference at 11:15. Maybe he'll talk about what he plans to do. But
and,
it's one
and
of the,
we will cover that press conference, folks. Go ahead.
But it's just an issue that I think it's just been so hard to get consensus on, even on issues where the public has a strong majority of the public holds a point of view in favor of some additional gun controls. You know, maybe the one that has the best chance of getting through is closing the gun show loophole, requiring background checks on all gun owners, all people who are trying to buy guns, and also more aggressively prosecuting those who try to buy guns and mm-hmm. fail the background check. That's one thing that there seems to be some consensus around, but when you talk about comprehensive legislation, it's just hard to be optimistic.
I agree with you on all those points. I think closing the gun show loophole so there's universal background checks no matter where or how you buy the gun, number one, might be more important even than banning particular types of weapons like these assault weapons. And we'll see if that has, you know, the political juice. I also agree with you that Manchin's idea from a political standpoint is probably wrong, that the bigger a piece of legislation gets, the less likely it is to actually get through Congress. I mean, we haven't even begun to hear the backlash on any mental health proposals. It's not just access to mental health services. If the NRA is talking about a national registry of people with serious mental health problems, imagine the backlash that's going to come from mental health rights advocacy groups. You know, we don't want our people stigmatized that way. And even the NRA is going to get back on the backlash to its own proposal and say, well, if somebody's, you know, had a little mental health history, well, maybe they can be cured. And so, you know, how far does that ever get?
Yeah, I agree. It's just tough, you know, and I think a lot of people saw the Newtown shootings as a moment where perhaps we would address and have a serious conversation about both gun control and mental health, because yet another of these just unspeakable shooting rampages, and maybe it is a moment, but I'm not convinced it is. And you know, we'll hear from President Obama next week in his inaugural address, and I'll be curious about what he lays out as his priorities, because you can't do everything. And if he chooses to do guns in a big way, maybe he can't do immigration. Maybe he does immigration and he tries to do some of the things you can do by executive order on gun control, which would be much more limited. It's like it's a lesson of health care reform. You've got to pick your shots and set your priorities, and I think we'll hear him do that next week.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. In a minute, we'll take a break and talk about some other things, like the response to President Obama's cabinet picks, including maybe he could have used some binders full of women. But before we get off guns, on Morning Edition today, there was a shocking story about Congress defunding public health studies on injuries from guns. For example, this doctor who used to ask patients about gun injuries and their gun ownership. Oh, we don't have that clip. Okay, well, you know what? Let's take that break, and we'll come back to that clip and talk about the cabinet and maybe the debt ceiling standoff and see how we think President Obama is going to try to make news in his news conference later this morning. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, Susan Page. We can take some phone calls, too. Anybody want to react to John Huntsman, are you inspired by No Labels, or do you think it's a namby-pamby attempt to get people to play nice that isn't really going to have an impact, or anything else you want to say about what we've been talking about so far? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, Susan, you know how the NRA is always trying to resist any little piece of gun regulation on the theory that it's going to wind up ultimately in the government coming and confiscating everybody's guns. And Morning Edition today was talking about how that even extends to public health research and the Centers for Disease Control, where if there were ever studies in the past about guns and public health, they've largely been defunded. And one of the people who used to do that and likes to do that is Dr. Art Kellerman, an emergency room doctor and gun researcher. And when you ask people about gun deaths and gun injuries and keep the data on it, one of the things that emerged.
In other words, a gun kept in the home was 43 times more likely to be involved in the death of a member of the household than to be used in self-defense.
So is the NRA so powerful that Congress is immune to stats like that when deciding whether more guns equal more public safety or less?
Man, that is one shocking statistic. And, you know, gathering that kind of data and distributing it might cause a lot of Americans to say, well, I've got a gun in my house, but maybe I shouldn't. That is definitely one way to change maybe the culture of guns. But does the NRA have a lot of power with Congress? Well, you bet. You bet, because they have distributed money. They have one issue. They focus on that. They focus on that today and tomorrow and next week. And that has given them considerable influence among many Republicans and some Democrats.
And the NRA says its membership has grown by 100,000 since the Newtown shooting. Did you see David Keene on CNN yesterday? So for all anyone who thought, you know, for anyone who thought it might shrink their membership because Wayne LaPierre looked so hardline in his response to Newtown in that big public statement, this is the America we live in, 100,000 more NRA members, or do we doubt the number that David Keene claims?
Well, I think Wayne LaPierre's remarkable news conference probably generated new members for both sides of this debate. We have a story in today's USA Today by my colleague Jackie Kucinich about the growth in membership in pro-gun control organizations as well. But yes, I spent the previous year covering the campaign and out with conservative audiences, you often hear fears about President Obama when it came to guns, that he was going to come after their guns. Dates all the way back to the comment he made in the 2008 primaries about people clinging to guns and religion. So I am not surprised that this would generate support for the NRA, even as it generates support for the NRA opponents.
Tammy in Morris Plains on No Labels. Tammy, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You asked if you were inspired or uninspired. I was a little bit discouraged by John Huntsman not explaining some more specific positions the group might take. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I can understand why they might not want to do that at this point. But I was very inspired. I'm so discouraged by the lack of collaboration and the extremism on both sides of the aisle in Congress that anything I can do, I'm excited. In fact, I just signed up and signed their petition on the website just now after that interview.
Uh-huh. Very good. And are there any positions that are attached to this for you?
You know, I'm very conservative and grew up very conservative, but I would like to see lots of the gun law loopholes closed. I'd like to see the tax code simplified. Those are two that come to mind right now.
Tammy, thank you so much. Please call us again and make your voice heard. Noel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I'm a real fan
of
the show. I'd like to know why we can't license bullets. Why don't we just give up on assault weapons and clips? There's too many in America. There's one for every American. Why not just license bullets? That would retroactively make every assault weapon and every handgun safe, because someone would have to carry a license to purchase ammunition.
Thank you, Noel. Susan, does this ever come up? It's not the first time I've heard an idea about regulating bullets in some way, maybe branding each bullet with a serial number or something like that, so every shot from every gun is traceable.
Right. There are new technologies that make it possible to have traceable bullets. And I've heard the proposal when it comes to more high-powered kinds of ammunition. But it seems a little bit like a backdoor, and I'm not sure if you have a debate over kind of the meaning of the Second Amendment, if you can use ammunition as a way to, get around that debate. I'm not sure that's realistic. But one thought on Tammy's call, if I could.
Yes.
You know, I think one thing not one thing built this atmosphere of hyperpartisanship that freezes us in place, and not one thing is going to fix it. And I like the idea of lots of different things going on that try to kind of chip away at it or remedy it or make small pieces of progress. No labels might be one of those, and Mayor Bloomberg's role might be one of those, and the effort in California, the move by initiative to change the way congressional redistricting goes on there is one of those. And I think that's the way maybe we should think about this debate. Not that there's going to be one thing that fixes it in a heartbeat, but that it's going to be a process that's probably going to involve several different ways of approaching it.
All right. Susan Page, USA Today, Washington Bureau Chief. We have a few minutes left. Let's go through a few other things real quick. President Obama's new cabinet. First, looks like he forgot to collect any binders full of women. How big is the change in gender balance among the new nominees?
Well, it's the change isn't that big, but the optics were pretty devastating. I mean, what we really had was Hillary Clinton leaving as Secretary of State and getting replaced by a nominee who's not female but male, right? I mean, that's the only gender difference we've seen there. But we've had this series of announcements for the most important cabinet jobs, and they've all been white males. And this after a campaign that was focused, but President Obama was elected by women voters. Men voted for men like yourself, Brian. A majority of them voted for Mitt Romney. Women are the ones who put President Obama back in the White House for another term. And it was the focus of so much of their campaign. And I think that's made it disappointing to a lot of women to see this procession of men for these top jobs.
I think that's the most broadly that I've ever been broad brushed. Men, men like yourself, right? In other words, anybody who's a man, you're in that group.
That is correct, Brian. And you can defend the gender if you wish.
Well, I will just ask you, what defenders of President Obama are saying is, for one thing, his closest advisor is still Valerie Jarrett, even though she's not a cabinet appointee. Honestly, we've had a pretty lively debate here in the office over whether Obama has a responsibility to have a cabinet that looks more like America and whether that results in more awareness about policy that affects women, or if this is a non-issue and it only matters what policies his cabinet members support.
I think that, Valerie Jarrett is indeed perhaps the aide personally closest to him. And in that notorious White House photo, she was in it but hidden by a man, and that struck a lot of people as kind of symbolic. I think that one thing that we know is that women tend to approach policy and politics as a group somewhat differently than men do. We know these from some of the studies that have been done at Rutgers and other places, that women tend to be more collaborative. They tend to be a little less confrontational. They bring a different life experience when it comes to policy. So whether he has a responsibility or not, wouldn't it be smart politics to have women in some of the key jobs?
You would think. And we know about the debate over Chuck Hagel. We'll talk more about that. For defense secretary with former Afghanistan U.S. Forces commander General Stanley McChrystal, who's coming up here in about a half hour. But what about President Obama's new Treasury Secretary nominee, his current chief of staff, Jack Lew? I heard a conservative talk show over the weekend really going after him as ideologically big government and taxes and with not much finance experience to make him qualified for Treasury Secretary. Is Jack Lew another hot-button nominee, or is that just talk show blather?
I think that was talk show blather because Jack Lew is a Democrat, that's for sure, not surprisingly in a Democratic administration, and he doesn't bring the kind of finance experience that Tim Geithner has brought to the job. On the other hand, he brings a lot of experience in negotiating on budget issues, dealing with Capitol Hill, and that's probably the set of skills that the Treasury Secretary is going to need, at least for like the first 6 months of this year when we face this series of battles with Congress on raising the debt ceiling and dealing with spending.
All right. So we have President Obama's news conference coming up next hour. We'll cover it. Do you think he called this to make a certain statement about a certain thing? Are you getting any hints?
Yes, I think he is likely to talk about these threats from Republicans that they are ready to shut down the government in these battles that I just mentioned, and his stance on that. He's taking a really unrelenting stance on not being willing to negotiate on the debt ceiling. That's kind of a surprise because he negotiated on it last time. I think the White House feels they have the public relations advantage in this debate, and that Republicans are really taking a risk in being willing to shut down the government. You remember what happened in 1995 when Newt Gingrich led a government shutdown, and it was really devastating for his side. So I think that's probably what the president hopes to talk about first.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Okay, Susan, it's back to tweeting about the Golden Globes gowns. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Robert Lustig versus Sugar. Stay tuned.